Hello and welcome to the Ranking the Albums podcast, the podcast in which I review the discographies of classic artists, judging their albums from worst to best, vom schlechtesten zum besten. This time I'm reviewing all 10 albums of the German godfathers of electronic music, Kraftwerk. Now known as musical innovators, back in the 1970s, the band were known as eccentric recluses and something of a novelty band in the West, with its otherwise anglophone-dominated popular music, famous for having cultivated a public image of uniformity. With expressionless and robotic mannerisms, voices and demeanour, their effective leader, Ralf Hütter, accentuated their difference from the mainstream with unemotive sing-speaking or Sprechgesang in a deadpan German accent. But this often distracted from the band's sly humour and impeccable sense of melody. From their Kling Klang studio base in Dusseldorf, they made or customised their own electronic instruments, from vocoders that manipulate vocals to electronic drum kits. In doing so, they could legitimately claim to have brought industrial sounds previously utilised by avant-garde composers to a mainstream audience in the 70s and 80s. Credited with heavily influencing the sounds of the late 70s and 80s in a range of genres spanning from post-punk and new wave to early 80s synth-pop, electronica, techno, house, dance, early hip-hop, this mechanised, synth-driven sound had a profound effect, not just on the sound of music of the 80s and beyond, but of the whole musical approach of subsequent bands and artists. Guitars and traditional instrumentation were jettisoned in favour of synthesizers, drum machines and vocoders. While not the only artist to use synthesizers, which has been incorporated on top of traditional instruments in compositions going back to the 60s, they were the first to embrace a sound of pure electronics. They self-produced many of their records at Kling Klang, a kind of sound laboratory, and this, as well as their academic, scientific and European image, played into something wholly different and inscrutable. They released albums in German and English and incorporated French, Italian and Japanese language into their songs. This and their dedication to making what they describe as industrial Volksmusik, that is danceable, cerebral and also fiercely European in nature, makes Kraftwerk's music feel decidedly modern, worldly and inclusive. Almost a rejection of popular music's obsession with Americana and blues-derived rock and roll. I'm just going to mention it now before I forget. Apologies to any German listeners for any pronunciation errors in this podcast. Don't wince too hard at the poor Englishman, he's trying his hardest. A little history now. Formed in 1969 in Dusseldorf by core duo Ralf Hütter and Florian Schneider, the first stage of the band's history could be defined by experimental avant-garde freeform music. They actually first formed as a band under the name Organization and released just the one album called Tone Float in the summer of 1970. I won't be covering it in these rankings, but it sounds a bit like if Traffic went to art school. Changing their name to Kraftwerk, they were in amongst a wave of bands from Germany performing experimental art rock, including peers like Can and Tangerine Dream, all of whom were reduced to the categorisation of krautrock, a label invented by the British music press, which is in equal measure affectionate and condescending. From 1970 and 1974, Kraftwerk had an unstable lineup, which at one point included another key duo in krautrock, Michael Rother and Klaus Dinger, who went on to form the seminal krautrock band Neu. Nowadays, Kraftwerk barely mention their first three albums, and there's good reason for it. There's a lack of structure and of the conceptual focus that came to define the band. Instead, they regard their following eight albums as canonical. Their first three records are noticeably absent from Spotify. Many artists release early albums that are regarded as works of naivety, but few bands actively disown their early records. When Kraftwerk reissued their albums in 2009, they defined their discography as the catalogue. And they numbered their albums 1 to 8, effectively rewriting history and demarcating Autobahn as their debut. One of the albums in Kraftwerk's official discography is 1991's The Mix, which is basically a remix of their greatest hits updated for the dance floors of the 1990s. Considering it's a live album of previously released material for the purposes of this podcast, And for consistency across all my podcasts, I'm going to disregard Kraftwerk's official discography and stick to the studio albums of original material. Going back to their third record, Ralph and Florian, the duo expanded to a trio with Wolfgang Fleur joining in 1974 to play electronic drums. Karl Bartos joined in 1975 as an additional percussionist. And now with this stable lineup, this period up until 1986 represents the bulk, the real meat, if you will, of Kraftwerk's discography. And it certainly represents their best work. 1974's Autobahn was the big breakthrough, its title track becoming a surprise hit in the UK and US. Notably, David Bowie and Brian Eno were inspired by the band's early records to make their electronic-inspired music in Berlin. From Autobahn onwards, Kraftwerk made a run of albums stretching into the early 80s that were increasingly conceptual in nature and groundbreaking in their sound and composition. After the relatively quick-fire releases of Radioactivity, Trans-Europe Express, The Man Machine, and Computer World, Kraftwerk have only released two albums of original material since, which are Electric Café and Tour de France soundtracks. Partly this is a consequence of the difficulties of replicating the kling-klang studio sound in a live setting. In the late 1970s, they had nothing to do but to concentrate on their albums. In the modern era, the band have been able to tour their discography while subtly refreshing and updating their arrangements, while also developing a visual side to their repertoire previously unthinkable. Developments in technology arguably meant that the band lost their cutting edge, and arguably their focus too. In the mid-80s, Hütter and Schneider became obsessed with cycling. Fleur left the band, frustrated that his playing on record was basically rendered superfluous due to the advancements in drum machines. He was replaced by Fritz Hilpert. Karl Bartos left in the early 90s to be replaced by Henning Schmitz. While Hütter and Schneider carried on touring and releasing the occasional single, 2003's Tour de France aside, the band have now become a touring band only. Florian Schneider departed from the band in 2009 and from this earth in 2020, meaning the likelihood of further Kraftwerk albums at this stage seems unlikely. So now to my rankings. Unsurprisingly, the three disowned records are at the bottom end of the pile. I'll classify them as non-canonical and not good. Then there's a couple that I've described as canonical and good. There's a further two albums that I describe as near classics. And then the top three are all-time classics. So number 10 is their self-titled debut, Kraftwerk, released in 1970. And it's a purely instrumental record, their most recognisably krautrock, in inverted commas, record. Their producer, Connie Plank, has a range of psychedelic production tricks that often make the album sound strange and sinister. The opener, Rucksack, is its most recognisable track, with layers of dueling, echoing rhythmic flute, droning bass and repetitive drumming. There's a whole lot of love-esque, freaky midsection and a false ending. You might charitably describe it as playful. Stratovarius, with its spindly plucked bass and unusual drum patterns and caterwauling feedback. It's like a noise song, but released a couple of years before their debut record. The meditative, ambient, organ-led megahertz offers some well-needed respite, while Von Himmelhock ends the album with the album's most industrial-sounding song. On this one, while Klaus Dinger's drumming chops are impressive, the rest of the band are too busy farting away on snorting keyboards to make it a satisfying closer. All in all, this record is too self-consciously difficult for my taste, but it is interesting to see Kraftwerk operate as a rock band, albeit a deeply weird one. I think the best thing about the album is the Warhol-inspired artwork of a traffic cone, a foretaste of what's to come with Kraftwerk's love for everyday objects. At number 9, we have Kraftwerk 2, released in 1972. Despite its near-identical album artwork to its predecessor, this time the traffic cone on the sleeve is green. Subtle difference. The band's second album sees them ditch the drummers and develop a more gentle but no less experimental sound. There's a newfound delicacy on opener Kling Klang, the name of which was repurposed as the name of their legendary studio. It's the first to feature a drum machine, which blends in nicely compared to the occasional rock showman histrionics of the debut. With multiple melodies and twinkling electric piano, there's even a faint resemblance to Computer Love on this track. But it does go on for 16 minutes and features the band upping and slowing the tempo of the drum machine to comical effect. But for the most part, this is a more successful and mature experimental composition compared to the frenetic noise of their debut. It's wordless again, but also there's an absence of synths. Instead, there's flute and organ and violin sounds that dominate. The hypnotic Strom, the second track, sounds like it should be on a movie soundtrack of a Tarkovsky film. But Spiel Vier, or Spiel 4, is largely some aimless rattling sounds and is a bit tedious. Many of the tracks on this record revolve around spacey, echoey bass and guitar and tape manipulation sounds. Kraftwerk often betray the influence of their countryman, the experimental composer Karlheinz Stockhausen, on this record. Kraftwerk 2 is an improvement on their debut and a wholly different album in tone, despite the artwork's continuity. I'd describe it as listenable experimentation, but it's not especially remarkable or revelatory. Now on to number 8, which is Ralph und Florian, released in 1973. And for the artwork of this time, the traffic cone is reduced in size, and instead there's a photo of a bespectacled, long-haired, leather-jacketed hipster Ralph Hütter alongside a smart, conservatively dressed Florian Schneider. Here the band are reduced to their core duo, but they're identifiable as individuals, and it's about as far as the themes and the cover of The Man Machine as you can get. The opener, Elektronisch Roulette, marks a contrast with Kraftwerk 2's relative quaintness. There's scraping guitars, glitchy electronics, and stuttering drum patterns. I can hear echoes of LCD Sound System's All My Friends in this one. Tongeberge is a spacey, swirling, flute-led piece that doesn't sound too different from moments of Side B of Autobahn. Cristallo has glimmering synths and a squalling electro pulse. It's the track most like the Kraftwerk to come. Heimat Länge makes use of producer Conny Plank's spacious reverb as layers of flute sing to a simple pastoral piano melody. It's a really classically pretty piece. Side B's Tanzmusik makes use of electronic drums and light ringing bells to drive its rhythm. It's one where the lack of vocals and lyrics make it feel like a promising demo rather than a lost gem. Only the 13-minute Ananas Symphony is a bit of a drag. It's a sort of tone poem with flanged steel guitar and several different sections. It seems mainly like a vehicle for Conny Plank's admittedly impressive production. With Ralph und Florian, there's a sense of progression from their first two records sonically. There's a real sense of them reaching for the right kind of sounds, even if the compositions still take on an entirely improvisational and wordless quality. A more structured, purposeful approach would soon be adopted with more consideration given to themes, rhythm, and melody. While this record is not quite classic Kraftwerk, it's still recognisably a Kraftwerk album as we'd know it, and for that reason I'd say it's easily the best of their early work. It's been reasonably chronological so far, but I'm going to break with that now. My number 7 choice is Electric Café, released in 1986. This album was 5 years in the making, and that's partly because an album had been made of the very same material in 1983, only then to be scrapped. 1983 saw the release of the standalone single Tour de France, which was originally going to appear on this record, but thematically would have made very little sense on the eventual album. You can listen to the outtake demos on YouTube from the 1983 scrapped album, which was originally called Technopop. And they're pretty good, but you can tell Kraftwerk are rehashing a lot of the sounds of their 70s albums, and you can see why they scrapped the original version of the record. Hütter was involved in a cycling accident in 83, which delayed the album's eventual release for even longer. A new technology played its part. Although recorded in analog, Kraftwerk embraced digital technology for the first time and digital instrumentation. Despite self-producing for their previous albums, this time the band enlisted American producers to modernise the Kraftwerk sound. As perfectionists, this required a lot of work and plenty of flights out to the US. Digital technology allowed for a more cut-and-paste approach, which is definitely apparent in how the beats are assembled and programmed. A full 5.5 years after the release of Computer World, Electric Cafe was initially seen as a bit lightweight in comparison to their previous work, but I do think it's a better album than those initial critics suggested. Boing Boom Chak is the opener of the record, that's very difficult to say, with its fun but silly onomatopoeic lyrics, it presents their updated sound. And there's almost malfunctioning voices in there, thudding drum sounds and a thinner sounding keyboard melodies. Second track's Technopop's lyrics basically just read as a description of Kraftwerk's sound, synthetic electronic sounds, industrial rhythms all around. The third track, Musik Nonstop, continues the style of disembodied voices and layers of industrial beats. It's the sort of track you can imagine played in Detroit or in the Hacienda. While side A emphasises texture ahead of melody, side B's opener, The Telephone Call, makes up for this oversight. The poppiest track on the album is the only Kraftwerk song sung by Karl Bartos. It's thematically and musically a bit of a rehash of the track Computer Love from the Computer World record, but its beat absolutely smacks. Sex Object is the next track with a deep synth string section, popping bass and tremolo twangs, which are just about enough to distract from the awkwardness of the lyrics and the creepy robotic whispers of yes, yes, no, no. The final track is the title track, Electric Cafe. It's rather underwhelming, but once again, lyrically reads like a manifesto. They sing in French about their desire to make political art in the atomic age, for example. I think as an album, Electric Cafe suffers for its lack of binding, obvious concept. And although it's somewhat compensated for in the 2009 remasters, the thinness of the digital sound is sometimes very noticeable. The 2009 reissue reverts to the album's original title, Technopop, which at least makes more sense as a self-referencing concept, but it still feels conceptually slight, particularly compared to Computer World's brilliance in this regard. I like this record, but I do think you have to like and enjoy Kraftwerk already to appreciate it, and it's rightly not considered among their finest. Now on to number 6, which is Tour de France Soundtracks, released in 2003. With later editions, it's just known as Tour de France. It was released to coincide with the centenary of the Tour de France, and it takes the multi-stage bicycle race as its inspiration. And as mentioned before, Kraftwerk had released the original Tour de France track as a standalone single in 1983. The song's concept is extended across the entirety of the album. The track itself is reworked into a three-song form at the start of the album, while a polished version of the single concludes the record. And it's a track typified by heavy panting, bike chains whirring, and wheels spinning, and electric sounds all melding together. In doing so, the band realised their most convincing sonic illustration of the man-machine concept, the human body providing the energy to propel the bike forward as man and instrument work together as one. Ralph Hooter's robot voice intones deeply in French throughout the record, and in doing so, the record celebrates the band's pan-European identity. Notably, the French border was easily reachable by bike from their base in Dusseldorf. My highlights include the mid-paced Vitamin with its psychedelic keyboard trills, Aerodynamic with its throbbing pulse and Electrocardiogram's mechanised breathing sounds. And I think the second half of the record is much stronger than its tentative opening. The tempo drops for tracks like the aptly named Regeneration, which precedes the propulsive title track, therefore illustrating the need for the cyclists to go again and find extra reserves of energy. The record is a successful one, but at 55 minutes, it feels quite deliberately like an endurance test. Despite its immaculate soundscapes, the album isn't groundbreaking in comparison to the band's earlier works. Now nearly 2 decades old, it sounds much better, more assured than Electric Cafe, and therefore it's a welcome, fresh, but not quite classic album that's likely to be the band's last. Now on to a couple of near classics. At number 5, We've got Autobahn, released in 1974. The main event of this record is, of course, the 22-minute long title track that takes up the entirety of the A-side of the record and is in itself a journey split up into several sections. Starting with the sound of keys unlocking the car and the ignition starting, the word Autobahn is spoken in a computerized voice. Around 50 seconds in, a synth rhythm intensifies as a more frightening voice hisses the title. It's an introduction to the new Kraftwerk, where the title of the song is repeated countless times, repetition being the mainstay of the band's music. Even after a dreamier synth melody enters, it's the rhythm that's most notable. Dubbed as Motorik by the British press, it describes a rhythm of endless momentum and velocity. An Autobahn, with its theme of driving on the motorway, encapsulates this sound and concept better than any other track. The flute that comes in at around the 3.5 minute mark seems to represent the idyllic sights of driving through the country, while the sound of cars zooming by are illustrated by dark washes of synth, which hint at the dangers of driving. Built in the 1930s, the Autobahn system would have been seen as a Nazi project by Germans, but ultimately the band reclaimed the motorway from its origins. There's a celebratory element to the track Autobahn, which is ever more apparent as the track progresses. In many ways, it's the definitive Kraftwerk track. It probably could have gone on for longer had vinyl not limited its length. The edited single version became a hit, partly down to its veer far and far and far and off their Autobahn novelty nursery rhyme and sly reference to Barbara Ann by the Beach Boys. Incidentally, it sounds a bit like they're singing Fun Fun Fun, another Beach Boys song and another song about driving. With Autobahn, the band demonstrate their unapologetic German identity and a winking humour as well. Side B is all instrumental, and is another kind of sweet. Komete and Melody Eins has dark synths, a distant thud of drums, and a whistling windy sound. Eventually, a prettier piano melody twinkles to the fore until the final whooshy sound, presumably meant to represent the comet of the title, comes in. It fades directly into Komete and Melody Zwei, which is pure spacey krautrock, with bassy and sparkling synths pounding out its jaunty rhythm over escalating chord changes. It's the most exciting track on the record, other than Autobahn. Mitternacht is a creepy composition with doomy tones and a violin that scrapes some noise resembling whale song, and there's tick-tocking percussion in the mix too. In contrast, the closing Morgenspaziergang, or Morning Walk in English, is a much calmer tune, contrasting with the nighttime themes of the previous tracks. There's a pastoral melody played on recorder. A piano and a dulcimer are also plucked delicately. This time the electronic instruments mimic natural elements, such as water flowing and birds singing. If Kraftwerk set out to make industrial folk music, this is the closest they ever come to actual folk music. It's quite an unexpected term for this album, and a real anomaly in their discography. Autobahn's importance in Kraftwerk's development can't be understated. The band found their sense of identity and purpose, and it's an exciting record from that perspective. But it still has echoes of their early avant-garde experimentalism and improvisation. In comparison to the focus, structure and conceptual cohesiveness their later records have, I don't think this record would be quite as revered if not for the title track. At number four, Nummer vier, is Radioactivity from 1975. Released less than a year after Autobahn, what's interesting about this album is its relative sparseness and how different it is from the rest of their discography. It's the band's very first fully electronic album, but it's an album very much influenced by the electronic sounds of the past. The title track, an effective opener, remains a stunner, simultaneously a comment on the development of nuclear power and a celebration of the joys of radio. It opens with a Geiger counter clicking before fading into Morse code bleeping and a harrowing synthesized choir. The pounding bass synth and factory-like hissing of drums emphasize the track's industrial sound, almost certainly influencing Joy Division and their producer Martin Hannett. Its simple, almost oriental plucked melody clearly influenced the likes of Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. In the decades following the album's release, the band made it explicit they were against nuclear energy, but the original lyrics almost celebrate it. Radioactivity discovered by Madame Curie is in the air for you and me. Since the band's name is literally power plant in German, it's hard not to take it at face value as celebrating nuclear power as a great advancement. Post Chernobyl, the band were at pains to redepict this song as a warning about the dangers of nuclear. But there's a double meaning to the whole track and by extension the whole album. Radioactivity, tune into the melody. Like Autobahn, the record is a celebration of technology, this time the radio is the focus. Radioland, with its subtle, pretty melody, slumbering pace and sleepy vocal, seems to emphasise the soporific effect of putting radio on late at night so that it fades into airwaves, which ups the tempo with its repetitive electro rhythm, sing-song melody and soaring mellotron and theremin sounds. The lyrics underline how radio had an enormous impact as a transformative means of communication. When airwaves swing, distant voices sing. Intermission and news are brief sound collages featuring the muffled voices of newsreaders. Side B opens with The Voice of Energy, which is again barely even a proper composition, only featuring a robotic voice speaking in German. But the words are central to the album's theme. It translates to, "This is the voice of energy. I am a giant electrical generator. I supply you with light and power. And I enable you to receive speech, music and image through the ether. I am your servant and lord at the same time. Therefore guard me well, me, the genius of energy." It's a key theme in Kraftwerk's discography, the idea of technology representing a threat and an opportunity. I am your servant and lord. The voice of energy fades into Antenna with its throbbing rhythm and sing-song melody. It's one of the album's best tracks. But it's fair to say most of the album's compositions drift by fairly idly. I find Radio Stars irritating and Transistor a bit twee. Uranium is a short piece of synthesized choir, supposedly sampled by New Order for their track Blue Monday. The final track, Om Sweet Om, starts at an almost funereal pace and tone, the robot voice intoning the title, presumably referring to Om's Law. But gradually the tempo increases and the melody soars into something genuinely uplifting. The song's flute sounds, this time played on a mellotron, evokes footage of old science fiction films and the space race and of early electronic music pioneers. It deliberately sounds much older than it actually is, making for a fitting ending to the record. Radioactivity is one of those records that's greater than the sum of its parts. Individually, I'd perhaps only listen to Radioactivity and Antenna, but together it makes perfect sense. It's a sound collage of static bleeps, news reports and retro keyboard sounds. It makes for a coherent album dedicated to technology, but shot distinctly through the lens of the past. With the Nazi radio set depicted on the original cover, one has to assume Kraftwerk intended to highlight the radio's historical role in propaganda and population control. Like with Autobahn, there's a similar attempt to reclaim the joys and the possibilities of technology from the way it had been misused for evil ends in the past. Radioactivity, with its high-pitched sounds and lack of recognisable songs, may be a bit much for casual listeners, but it's important to recognise that the band were deliberately evoking late-night radio broadcasts that they heard while growing up, most likely played quietly as to not aggravate the parents. These broadcasts, you know, showcased weird and wonderful sounds, and as such it's a record for late at night while in bed. Some records are best played loud, but this one is better played quietly. At number three, Nummer Drei, The Man Machine, which was released in 1978. This is also a record for late at night, but this time I'm talking about nightclubs and dance floors. I'd say this is a kind of dance record, but it's arty and cerebral too. Conceptually, it defined the band's signature idea and look, The album cover is a fine representation of this. The four band members dressed uniformly, appearing both human and robot-like. The Nazi colours and Soviet-era artwork are deliberate, indicating how humans can become subordinate to the machine of ideology. Kraftwerk were so committed to the concept that to promote the album, mannequins of the band resembling robots would represent the band in interviews and filmed performances, saw the mannequins play keyboards and electronic drum kit. The opening track, The Robots, kicks the album off with its bassy synth throb, a sound which was later sped up and ripped off by LCD Sound System for their track, Get Innocuous. Despite a deep, robotic voice intoning, "We are the robots," the intent isn't sinister. The lyrics present the robots as being programmed just to do anything you want us to. It's catchy and it's syncopated and it's a really fun track, and one of the band's signature tunes. Giorgio Moroder's influence is most detectable on the next two near-instrumental tracks on Side A. Space Lab, with its cheesy sci-fi soundtrack opening, leads to a commanding 4/4 beat and oscillating synth bass. The third track, Metropolis, continues in the same vein, referencing Fritz Lang's famous early science fiction silent movie of the same name, which was released in 1927. In doing so, the track represents another attempt to reclaim and pay tribute to pioneering 1920s and 30s German culture. It's their most blatant attempt to forge a defiantly retro-futurist sound, evoking urban nightlife with all its seediness. It's a real triumph of kitsch drama, dystopian yet danceable. The model kicks off Side B with a killer bass line and staccato keyboard stabs. At a palatable 3-minute length, it has something resembling a conventional verse-chorus structure, and therefore it's no surprise it was the band's biggest hit, albeit only a number one single in the UK on its re-release in 1982, in the midst of the synth-pop boom that the band had helped inspire. The model's cynical lyrics concern an ice-cold, unfeeling protagonist, but this time, shockingly, it's a woman. And the lyrics make a rather crude link between sex and commerce, but there's no doubt the track possesses a decadent and stylish allure, and it's one of their defining tracks. In amongst the record's emotionally detached tracks is the uplifting, nearly 9-minute long Neon Lights, a glimmering, shimmering tribute to the urban nighttime landscape. With one of their loveliest melodies, it's arguably the peak of the record. In an album of coldness and self-conscious machine music, this track is full of feeling and wonder. The title track closes the record with its cold clicking beat and countless mechanical polyrhythms, where at the start of the record the robots seem to be celebrated, depicted as harmless dancing servants of the human race. The man-machine sparse lyrics are much more ambivalent. The man-machine is both a pseudo-human being and a superhuman being. It leaves us pondering if the increasingly technology-dependent human race is simultaneously provided with the potential to be something greater than human, while being rendered as something less than human at the same time. With a relatively high BPM across pretty much all of the record's 6 tracks, and bright futuristic synths and memorable melodies, this is Kraftwerk at their most accessible, yet with no compromises made on their artistic vision. In some ways, it's their most image-defining, concept-defining, most Kraftwerkian of all Kraftwerk albums. And I'm at pains to put it in third place. I must admit, initially it was in first place when I started on these rankings. So what made me change my mind? I think, one, another electronic pioneer, Giorgio Moroder's influence is unmistakable. He had produced the disco classic I Feel Love, released by Donna Summer in 1977. And you can hear Kraftwerk adapting their sound slightly to make it more disco-friendly. Therefore, I think this is the one Kraftwerk album that's slightly behind rather than ahead of the curve. You could say it's a refinement of the style of Trans-Europe Express, Not that that is in itself a big criticism, it just makes it feel a little less revolutionary in comparison. But again, this is very harsh. The Man Machine is a top quality classic Kraftwerk album. At number two, Nummer zwei, is Computer World, released in 1981. Whereas previous records harked back to a pre-Nazi Weimar Republic containing both retro and futurist themes, this record looks only to the future. Partly inspired by a visit to an IBM factory, the concept of this record explores a world that is, as the title suggests, dominated by computers. I mean, how fanciful. The themes of technological advancement, presenting empowering and debilitating possibilities, had become a key Kraftwerkian theme. But whereas modes of transport, the radio, and the idea of man as a machine had all hinted at this, at the perils and the potential of technology, Computer World is unambiguous about the trade-offs. It is the band's most successful album conceptually, and of course that's due to its prescience, a vision of utopia and dystopia entirely recognisable in our own modern computer world. The title track is a fantastic opener, with a peppy beat, smooth bass tones, and an ominous synth melody. Ralph Hutter mutters the lyrics, Interpol and Deutsche Bank, FBI and Scotland Yard. By implicating intelligence agencies and banks, the state and commerce, there's an unsettling sense Kraftwerk are trying to say the advance of computers strengthen those who operate in the shadows, which provides a greater degree of power to these agencies over the individual. The German version of this track makes it clear these agencies have our data. Meanwhile, the band identify the areas of life where computers will have a transformative effect. Business, numbers, money, people, time, travel, communication, entertainment. So, pretty much everywhere then. In contrast, Pocket Computer, with its bleeps, whirring sounds and playful polyrhythms, it's a fun novelty track that makes use of the Casio FX501P programmable calculator as one of the instruments on the track. Unlike the powerful organisations mentioned in Computer World, this song focuses on the potential of the individual to operate new technology. The individual is the controller, not the controlled. On the third track, Numbers, the lyrics are comprised entirely of numbers spoken in German, English, French, Italian, Spanish, Japanese and Russian. Perhaps the heaviest track in their discography, it basically births techno as a genre and emphasises the international interconnectedness that computerised technology could and did bring about. It eventually segues back into the Computer World motif, played on a foreboding synth, until the voices speaking the numbers in various languages pile on top of each other, becoming unintelligible. The mangled voices seem to suggest that a computer world, instead of bringing automation and order, will become too complicated to the point of being chaotic. It's a stunning moment on the record, and its high point conceptually. Side B contains one of their compositional masterworks, Computer Love, which has probably the band's prettiest melody. It's a pop song with an underlying melancholy. It foresees computer technology as a facilitator of romance. One of the lyrics, I need a day to date, is scarily prescient of the world of algorithm-driven dating. There's also a very human, un-Kraftwerk desperation to the vocals when Hutter sings. I don't know what to do, I need a rendezvous. Even in a world of enabling computers, the narrator is isolated and alone, drained of human connection, and again rendered less than human. After that peak, the final two tracks are relatively low-key. Home Computer and It's More Fun to Compute are even more lyrically minimalist, but the songs arguably present a more optimistic vision of a world dominated by computers. The former's only lyric is, I program my home computer, beam myself into the future. The song seems to portray a future where the human achieves mastery over the machine. Whereas in the 60s and 70s, computers were huge, complex machines, Kraftwerk recognised how computers would become something mass-produced for home use and could have a liberating potential for the human race. as sounds shimmer and whiz like an arcade game, It's More Fun to Compute refers to the slogan It's More Fun to Compete, which was plastered on old pinball machines in the 1950s and 60s. Finally, a siren-like melody creeps back into the mix, ending the album on a deeply ambivalent note. It's a fine end to a thought-provoking, holistic and engrossing record. It is not an exaggeration to describe Computer World as a visionary record. In fact, the only thing that dates the record is its cover, which is an illustration of an early IBM-style desktop computer. And now there's only one album left. It's Nummer Eins, Trans-Europe Express, released in 1977. I've spoken before on this podcast about how many of the very best albums often feel like a journey of sorts, and few albums encapsulate that notion better than this one. Its stylized cover presents Kraftwerk's band members as with side partings dressed conservatively in suits, rather at odds with the futuristic sounds of the record. In an era of punk and disco, on the face of it, this record does not look as revolutionary as it sounds. The epic opener, Europe Endless, is distinctly European. It fades in on a bright, echoing synth line. The track builds with synthesized choir, oompa-like rhythm, and Europe Endless repeatedly voiced through a vocoder. The lyrics eulogize Europe's parks, hotels, and palaces, and it also warns of the continent's elegance and decadence. Inspired by train travel through the varied landscapes of Central Europe, the song evokes a borderless journey through an endless continent of beauty and refinement. While modern audiences may detect imperialistic superiority in the song's lyrics, I think the post-war context of the time is crucial. To depict a continent no longer spoiled by war, bloodshed and invasion, if you consider Europe's entire history. I mean, that's the whole song's purpose. It's a vision not far from the ideals of the European Union itself. After nearly 10 minutes of soaring, unstoppable rhythm, there's a dramatic shift of tone with the second track, The Hall of Mirrors. With this track, the focus switches from idealized romanticism to dark narcissism. It's an oddly intense track with lyrics that dwell on the distorting effects fame and image can have on the self. Its industrial beat, imposing bass line and twinkling keyboard melody meld beautifully, and they act as a counterweight to other keyboard sounds that spiral out of control into dizzying effect. The song has a strange, haunting quality to it. The song that sounds to me the most like the forerunner to the 1980s synth-pop boom is the third track, Showroom Dummies, which maintains the album's intensity with its clicking beat, danceable groove and grand choir melody. Side B is dominated by the album's title track, which is both a track in its own right and also a suite of three tracks. It starts with thundering velocity, its hypnotic rhythm evoking the movement of a train. The haunting, grandiose synth lines and deadpan vocals make this track probably the most exciting in Kraftwerk's discography. Lyrically, the title is repeated countless times, and David Bowie and Iggy Pop are casually name-dropped as the narrator travels from Paris to Vienna to Dusseldorf. Throughout, the suite maintains the same rhythm, but Metal on Metal introduces exactly that, booming and clanging metal on metal, which sounds viscerally industrial. Abzug returns to the melodies of Trans-Europe Express, but they're all sequenced differently from that earlier track, almost like a remix of the original tune, and the overall suite actually feels like an extended mix of a single. Its effect on dance music and DJs and remixes can't be understated. After the Trans-Europe Express suite, the instrumental Franz Schubert is a soothing homage to the Austrian composer, which has a similar airy, romantic sound to Europe Endless. It's no surprise the album's journey comes to an end when it fades into the final track, Endless Endless. It brings us full circle to the opening track's themes of European identity, of beauty, possibility and optimism. Now, as a statement, I don't think this album is quite as strong as Computer World. There are two concepts within this album, one that celebrates a harmonious modern Europe, reclaiming its former glories from the horrors of the past, and a second theme that reflects not on collective identity, but takes a philosophical look at individual identity and the differences between appearance and reality. But musically and sonically, I think it's their most gripping record, with greater intensity in the sound and a real beauty to Kraftwerk's strange melodies. It looks backward and forward in time, and as such feels modern yet nostalgic. Many musicians have looked to the past for influence, but few have genuinely managed to sound like the future at the same time. That's all for my rankings. Kraftwerk are quite unusual in the sense that they haven't got a best-of compilation. Instead, after releasing Tour de France, they released two live albums that act as an overview of their post-1974 discography. 3D The Catalogue, released in 2017, presents a live version of every album in Kraftwerk's so-called catalogue, including The Mix. Minimum Maximum is a more satisfying live album, released in 2005 and comprising of recordings from their 2004 world tour. It at least sounds like a proper set list from a Kraftwerk tour, although in reality all the tracks are taken from different concerts. In terms of what order to approach Kraftwerk's records, I think The Man and Machine and Trans-Europe Express are the most accessible, and then Computer World, Autobahn and Radioactivity. That's all. Kraftwerk, one of popular music's true trailblazers, and certainly Germany's greatest band. Thanks very much for listening. Until next time.